Hi, my name is Sarah Tran.
And this is Megha Jan.
And we
are Technology.
Megha, let's start off with tea. What flavor of tea are you drinking today?
Okay, I am drinking hibiscus tea today. What are you drinking, Sarah?
I am drinking some lemon tea.
Today is Tuesday, October 13th. And we are just 21 days away from the most pivotal election in perhaps all of US history.
So for this episode, we decided that what better to talk about than election technology, or the way we like to call it is elect tech. So today we're going to be bringing you a technology series looking at three different startups tackling various aspects of data privacy, of online security and misinformation in the midst of the election.
And the coolest thing about these startups is that they have three distinct approaches in the way that they do this. So the first is actually sending journalists on the ground to analyze and gather information and make, you know, recommendations and gather ratings for certain news sources. The second is using AI to essentially do the exact same thing. And then the third is actually using blockchain to preserve and protect user identities so that you can engage in safe discourse on social media and anywhere else.
So the first startup we're looking at is called NewsGuard. NewsGuard is essentially a human-centered approach to fighting disinformation. But before we get further into it, Megha, maybe you can tell us more about what it actually does. And I know you did have the chance to test it out on your browser, so tell us how that went.
Yeah, fun fact, before we started recording this podcast, I actually downloaded it and I tested it out, and it was showing Sarah how cool it is. So thank you, Sarah, for sharing this awesome startup with me. But basically, for those of you out there who are hearing about NewsGuard for the first time, I know today was the first time I heard about it. It's a developer of like news and content ratings. So I use like McAfee on my computer, and I kind of like to think of this in the same way, because McAfee usually has like tick marks next to websites that are supposed to be safe. And then they don't have anything next to websites that aren't supposed to be safe, and they kind of give you a warning before you go on the website. They're like, this may not be safe for your computer. Would you still like to proceed? So I like to think of this in the same way, because when you have, first of all, it's a Chrome extension or extension for whichever search engine that you like to use. So it could be Mozilla, Safari, anything you like. And it's also on Apple and Android as a mobile app. So basically what they do is once you install this and you go on any news website, we tested out, I believe it was the New York Times and the Onion and Breitbart and Wikipedia as well. It gives you four different types of ratings. So the four different types of ratings that you get from NewsGuard are basically green. So it's like a little shield symbol, and it has a tick in the middle and it's green. And this basically means if the website like adheres to basic standards of credibility and transparency, it is good to go. So the New York Times was rated green. Red, it's the same shield, except it's colored red and there's an exclamation mark in the middle, is if it fails to meet basic standards of credibility and transparency. So there's like nine criteria that NewsGuard is basically running in the background, and they're trying to see how each website assesses in these nine areas. And if they fail like several of their nine areas, then they get the red rating. So Breitbart got the red shield rating. And then there's Satire, which is a yellow shield with a smiley face in the middle. And when we searched up The Onion, then that received a Satire rating, unsurprisingly. And then there's lastly Platform, which is just a gray shield with an information like eye symbol in the middle. And all that means is that this primarily hosts user-generated content, and it does not vet this content. So as we know, Wikipedia is very much a platform like this. And when we searched that up, that is what appeared next to it. I thought this was just a great way of testing out whether the software actually works, and it does.
Yeah, another thing, I feel like, you know, NewsGuard has so many different components to it. Another one is the way that they combine the qualitative and like quantitative analysis, I guess, or the way that they create a criteria. And so if you go on their page, they have this concept of a nutrition label. and they use those nutrition labels and apply it to different news outlets. So essentially, this nutrition label is based off of this objective criteria they create. And for an example, if underneath the credibility category, if they regularly correct and clarify their errors, that's a total of 12.5 points. So it's on that sort of rubric or evaluation scale. I like that a lot because it's less about saying, oh, the New York Times appears really credible, but it's more about breaking down what does credibility mean in order to really measure it and therefore justify like what is a, you know, a credible news outlet today. So I think that was pretty interesting to me.
I find that greatly interesting as well. And I think it just shows how much they are adhering to their own company culture and values, right? Because they are trying to hold all these news sources accountable, essentially, in the spirit of credibility and transparency. And to further build on their own credibility and be transparent, they're also releasing publicly what these criteria are, what their rubric looks like, why their ratings exist for this very reason. And I think that's what makes this such a great startup for people to use. Even though there's a lot of startups in this area out there, believe me, if you search it up like Sarah and I did while researching this episode, you will find a lot of noise in this area, but there's very few that are truly sticking to their mission and have made it this far.
Right, like I couldn't agree more. I love the point you made with how they're really sticking to their own criteria by being transparent to any of their users on their own website. And if you look at their valuation, they've only been founded in 2018, where they raised a $6 million Series A round, which is pretty incredible for their first year. And now it's 2020, and they're at a $22.5 million valuation. So that's pretty crazy. They're also now at their mergers and acquisition deal stage, which means that from here, this $22.5 million valuation will probably skyrocket to $50 million plus. But I guess to kind of go back a notch, right? And instead of looking at their outward product and their outward valuation, what is their team like and what makes them different?
Their team is basically a group of journalists. So it's not AI running in the background. It is a group of legitimate, like industry level journalists who have their own standards. There's no secret algorithms and they're based in New York. So they have like a 24/7 rapid response SWAT team, which I find pretty fascinating. And they are literally going on the field, collecting research about all of these like various topics and then giving credibility ratings to these websites or news sources. I think that's a really comprehensive way of doing it. What are your thoughts?
You know, I think the fact that they're based in New York is really interesting because so many major news and media outlets are also based in New York. So I wonder like how has this either played to their advantage or their disadvantage if for example, I mean, I don't want to throw any shade at any companies, but let's just say like, you know, the New York Times hypothetically was like, I don't like the way you didn't give me the type of valuation I think I deserve, right? I wonder how that might have created some tea or friction between the two. But it does seem really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I think that was a funny point. Yeah, I mean, we don't know what goes on in the journalism world. I don't think it's a coincidence that NewsGuard is based out of New York because a lot of sources, as you were saying, are in NYC. But yeah, I think it's really cool that they not only have this team that is very put together, super professional, it also reflects in the types of customers that they serve to. You know, there's Microsoft, Bing, Jiffy, the U.S. Department of Defense, Turnitin, which is, I think, a very scarring three words for anyone who's graduated high school recently or is in high school right now. And then there's also the World Health Organization. So this is really, really crazy who they are able to impact with this sort of credibility rating system.
Yeah, and in addition to their credibility rating system, I also think NewsGuard functions as like this sort of a hub for like all these different resources to, in general, just, you know, how do we target misinformation better? And one of the things that they have on their website, it's an entire section, is this real-time COVID-19 misinformation resource guide. So if you click on it, which we will definitely make sure to post that link on our social. So follow us on Twitter and Instagram if you haven't already. We'll share that. And if you click on it, it'll take you through their entire list of just really great COVID-19 info and resources. So definitely make sure to check that out.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's cool that they're staying relevant and you can find proper information at this place. But moving on to our next startup, which is very similar to NewsGuard, you will notice, but their approach is what differentiates them. It's Factmata. They're an AI-centered approach to fighting disinformation. Sarah, do you want to share how exactly they do this?
Yeah, so unlike NewsGuard, where there's journalists going into the field directly, they're looking at a rubric and they're essentially comparing various components of a news outlet to those rubric and criteria. Factmata is using artificial intelligence or AI systems to ultimately create a quality score for different online content.
Yeah, essentially, more specifically for any AI nerds out there, they're using NLP or natural language processing to analyze text and then detect bias within that. And once they do this, they're able to tell really easily whether something is a very opinionated piece, it's unlikely to have actual information or be factual, or whether something is more factual in reporting. And I think Sarah can talk about this a little more because she did a science fair project. Was it for 2 years or a year?
Yeah, for 2 years. You know, fun fact, this is actually how I got my interest, or how I really developed my interest for technology. It was at the intersection of language and tech. So like just to see stuff like this come to fruition, pretty mind-blowing for me. So essentially my project was using a Python program in order to take a database of over 6,000 words that were classified as linguistically pure, which for examples happened to be a little polarizing, but some examples include build, hate, and wall. And we essentially utilized this massive database of 6,000 linguistically pure words and collected a series of tweets from top orders. So President Trump was in there. We looked at like Hillary Clinton's as well. And we even took some different speeches and we essentially cross-referenced the two using this Python program. And that kind of gave us a percentage of like which order, which speaker was more likely to use linguistically pure words, which are correlated from our research that we found to essentially a correlate with your extremist level on a political scale. But then we also had and found some implications with regards to this language to like popular extremist websites such as 8chan. A lot of the times it's known for in the media as a hub for sort of like violent extremist groups who happen to be on the alt-right. So kind of seeing stuff like this, like my own research and being able to observe how Factmata is using AI to do all this, just pretty awesome.
Definitely. This seems like a full circle moment for you. And I think it just shows like this area is really popping off. Like there's so much going on with using NLP in like a political context, and Factmata does that really well. So since there are, you know, so many startups in this area, and we keep mentioning that and keep emphasizing that, Sarah, what really sets this one apart?
Fun fact, Mark Cuban was actually an investor, or is actually an investor for Factmata. And they're pretty early stage, but they've already raised $3 million in investment, which is pretty awesome already.
Wow, that is freaking amazing. For them to be pre-seed and already have Mark Cuban backing them, blown away. But yeah, like Factmata was founded just 3 years ago in 2017. I have to imagine after, you know, the era of disinformation started in the wake of the 2016 political election and allegations about fake news being everywhere on both sides, really, regardless of which political, party you align yourself with or what your beliefs are. I think we can all agree that there is a lot of false information out there. But yeah, they were founded in 2017 and they're actually based out of London, but they are attempting to expand their operations across America, which is super, super cool.
And I think the last thing I'll add about Factmata is just more about their unique situation. So another one of their investors, in addition to Mark Cuban, they really do have a powerhouse for investors to say the least, is one of the co-founders of Twitter, which I think kind of signals that in the future, Twitter might acquire, possibly merge, or utilize Factmata and become a customer, which is pretty exciting. And just looking at the founding team, or the founder to be more specific, of Dhruv Gulati, who is a machine learning specialist in distant supervision for statistical claim detection, I think it just shows how, you know, you have these founders who already have the knowledge in the field and they're able to apply it to some sort of common greater good. It's so cool to see on our part.
Definitely. I always love it when people take almost like technological buzzwords. Like, I feel like AI and ML are really, really popular right now, and everyone wants to use it and apply it somewhere, but some people aren't so sure. But I love it when specialists in these fields are able to take what they know and then apply it for such a great cause. And honestly, the timing, it could not be better with Factmata. But that kind of brings us to, I guess, our third and our final startup, which is Right of Reply, or as they call themselves, Roarkey. And Roarkey is yet another tech startup that is actually using blockchain based online digital identity preservation on their quest to make political discourse safer.
Yeah, so I'm going to warn this by saying that I do not know enough about how blockchain functions, but it is definitely something, wink, wink, in the coming episodes that you guys can expect to hear more from us.
Okay, wow, I'm so excited, Sarah. I really can't wait for the upcoming episodes.
Yeah, but what I think is so cool about Roarkey is that they're using blockchain technology, which on a general level, to my understanding, it essentially allows you to interact in like this global community of people without ever really being able to track someone's identity, because it's all part of this larger encrypted network. And Roarkey is using blockchain technology to essentially make sure that you can always tell your truth. So that's like kind of their entire motto. It's that when you're replying or when you're posting online, when you're on a Reddit or a Quora feed and you're giving your really strong opinion on something, it's that no one can just follow you and track your IP address, for example, and that you're honestly just able to express yourself in a free manner and really just hold up that First Amendment.
Yeah, while I really, really like this technology and I think it is important to have this kind of discourse, I think there are some ethical concerns that may come up with it. And I think, Sarah, you and I were having this conversation just the other day, but how do you use tech that is supposed to keep people safe and kind of keep it away from people who might have the wrong intentions with it, right? Because there could be some people on 8chan, for example, who go on there, are extremists, are making statements that could be potentially very harmful, and maybe even, you know, threaten to harm some people. So in that case, how does a startup like Roarkey, you know, deal with people like that and make sure that governments and anyone else who wants to track them can actually track them?
That's such a great question. I feel like there still is a lot that Roarkey and other startups are trying to address in that field. But one thing that Roarkey does do that's kind of unique is that they create these unique digital identities for users so that they can safely engage with like posts in the online world. So it doesn't answer all the problems that need to be fixed and addressed in the field, but it does ensure that at least if you post on one platform using your encrypted identity, you're still technically able to follow that in some regards to another platform, but not necessarily like know who the person is, just kind of seeing like their various responses.
I see, that does make sense. And yeah, I think I would have to agree that there's still a lot of innovation to be done in all of these areas, frankly speaking, but that this is just a really cool application of blockchain technology.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I guess maybe you can you tell us more about like what is their finance situation looking like? I know we talked about some of the success of the other one, but I couldn't really find too much info about this one.
Yeah, I think Roarkey is really interesting in that we don't know that much about them as compared to a lot of the other startups we've talked about. There's just not a lot of information on Crunchbase and other websites. But as of now, their valuation is undisclosed, but they are currently planning on IPOing sometime soon. Roarkey is based out of London, and they are trying to expand into the Americas. And they were founded in 2018.
Yeah, so now that we've given an overview and kind of went over these three different startups, that all kind of have a similar mission in mind, but also go about it three different ways. I guess the question really is, like, Mega, do you think there's one that you prefer to the other? Or, like, what's your favorite of the three?
I think these three approaches that we've discussed, like the actual tangible journalism versus AI versus blockchain protected identities, I think all of them, as cliche as this response is, I believe that all of them need to work together for us to have a successful misinformation-free election. While you can use blockchain to protect people's identities, you also need journalists who are actually working on the ground, and then AI that can eliminate bias. But sometimes AI does have bias, you know, embedded within it due to the information that we're feeding to it as inputs. So you also need journalists to be working on that. And it's sort of this almost like system of checks and balances, where you have all these different technologies checking each other, balancing each other out, and making sure that everyone's voices are heard. But at the same time, the information that is being spread, whether it's about elections, whether it's about the pandemic, whether it's about, you know, voting, it's accurate.
I like that analogy to like checks and balances that you traditionally find in like a government system, because there is that argument that these technology companies are sort of becoming their own quasi governments. You know, if you think about it, like blockchain is this entire community of just encrypted tech that like no one truly has full authority over. But then I also think that of the three startups, the one that probably is hardest to enforce these checks and balances to is the blockchain one, right? Like how are we supposed to regulate in that field? But I like the point you brought up about sort of all of them needing to work together. And I couldn't agree more, because in the world of AI, you know, these systems can only build and ultimately act on the various programmings and learnings that they've been taught by their creators. And so whether that means some sort of a coalition between journalists and programmers, or perhaps, you know, finding the best of both worlds, so someone who could both program and understands like the ethics of solid journalism, will probably be where the solution, or at least some sort of an answer, lies in the technology and misinformation world.
I think that is super exciting, and I'm really looking forward to the day we have like some sort of consortium, what you're saying, between, you know, journalists, people working in AI, just anyone who wants to ensure that the internet and, you know, media industry as a whole is a safe place for everyone and all thoughts.
So I think one final note that I'd like to leave us all off on is just a general reflection on where we are today. When we think of the word health, we often think about the health of our society, especially in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. And then there's also the health of our economy. And then there's that other aspect, that health of our democracy. And the argument there really is that if you don't have credible information, how can you have a healthy, thriving democracy? So ultimately, these technologies, these three startups we talked about today, are actively working to create a healthier, stronger, and more vibrant democracy.
But with that, I think we're going to end our Technolithrees episode for October. Thank you so much for joining us. If you guys have any questions regarding any of these technologies, are starting to use them, or just want to engage in some insightful discourse, please feel free to tag us on Instagram or Twitter at technolity.podcast on Instagram, and then at technolitypodcast1 on Twitter. And use the hashtag Technolity Tuesdays if you'd like to be a part of this conversation.